So, Stu, that is in a nutshell how we're going to manage these stable patients. But let's get back to talking about the rare heavy vaginal bleeder, because occasionally we're going to see these guys. I've had a couple of these cases, and they're frankly frightening, right? These patients are...
They're among the scariest we have. And I know you usually had a few of them. I had a few of them. Let's talk about that. It's really interesting. So, obviously, ABCs, right? And, you know, these are going to get two large bore IVs. We're going to have, if we need to have, we're going to have O negative going. Okay, we're going to do a full massive transfusion protocol. Mm-hmm. If we have to, right? So that might be the same way you're treating a patient with a massive GI bleed or in trauma. That might be the road you're going down, where you're giving them lots of packed cells, plasma, platelets. That might be the case. There is a specific recommendation, Misaho, that ACOG actually gives for tranexamic acid, TXA.
I was impressed when I saw this, I have to admit.
Yeah, I mean, it shows that they're hip, right? Because in trauma patients, and possibly in some other patients now, for sure in trauma patients, we're using tranexamic acid. We're using a fairly straightforward protocol where we give a gram or so IV. The doses is things that you can look up at the time, but it does decrease bleeding. And in these women, as we go forward to the outpatient treatment, some of them are actually being putting on this medicine as an oral outpatient treatment. But for sure, if it's a sick crashing patient, that might be IV part of the treatment along with your massive transfusion protocol.
Vaginal packing, is this necessary? Is it not necessarily? Mel and I kind of touched on this in the September MRAP intro, so we're not going to belabor it. But what are your thoughts on vaginal packing in these massively hemorrhaging patients?
Well, the part B's that I feel most comfortable with, obviously, is the emergency resuscitation, getting big lines into this patient, the massive transfusion protocol, all that kind of stuff. Once you go past that, though, you've got to stop the bleeding. And you do have to pay attention to the bleeding site. You really do have to gain control there. And so I've tried different things, sometimes with success, other times, frankly, not. Vaginal packing is definitely a skill that I think that we should have. That might be something that you start doing. My preference, and I've read about this more than I've done it, is to use a Foley catheter. Uterine tamponade could be achieved by placing a 36 Foley in the uterine cavity and slowly inflating that balloon until you achieve tamponade. This is something that probably is a little cleaner. And you tried that on your case, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. I had a case of this and we tried packing with a Foley. It is not easy. You know, when they're massively hemorrhaging like that, it's hard to find the cervix, never mind anything else. So I can't say that the Foley was successful in my situation. I ended up packing with gauze, sterile gauze. And I think the biggest take-home point in this sort of massive transfusion resuscitation effort is getting gyne down in the ED and getting that patient out of the ED to the OR emergently, right? These patients are dying and definitive treatment for them is really going to be life-saving. And any of these efforts, whether it's uterine tamponade, whether it's vaginal packing, I think we try them just simply because, you know, you're going to do anything you can to try and stop the bleeding or help put pressure against it. But none of them have been shown to be fully effective. And so definitive care is really the key.
Now, a lot is made of using the hormones, but in this emergent situation, frankly, it's not going to be enough to save the day. It's going to take too long for these things to work. So although it really sounds exotic to use intravenous estrogen, and you can do that, you can give IV equine estrogen, it's not going to prevent someone from hemorrhaging in front of you to death. And so that is part of the treatment. If there's no contraindication to estrogen, like for example, they're having heart attacks and strokes, I wouldn't give it in that situation. That would be part of the treatment. I think another really important aspect of this to mention is the role for interventional radiology. Mm-hmm. And so your OBGYN is definitely going to be your first call on this. But in certain facilities, they're going to want to work with interventional radiology to do a uterine artery embolization, as opposed to straight going to the operating room to actually gain a better control of this bleeding. And so that's something else that you should be aware of. You might be also needing to involve interventional radiology.
Good point.
Summary.
All right, Stu, so has that brought us to the end? We've talked about the stable patient. We've talked about the unstable heavy vaginal bleeder. I think we've covered vaginal bleeding pretty extensively.
We really have.
It's so hard to summarize this. It's so hard. Because this topic is very broad, but mostly I think most of us get stuck on the fact that there's so much hormonal manipulation you could do, so many different types of hormones, so many different conjugated, unconjugated progesterone, estrogen things, and you really have to be doing it all the time every day to become a real expert at that part of it. So let's take a step back and let's remember what we're doing in the emergency department. When we first see these patients, they're not pregnant and they're bleeding, go back to first principles, stable or unstable. If they're unstable, it's so much easier for us. If they're unstable, we resuscitate with blood products. If they've got a bleeding disorder, we reverse them. If they're on warfarin, we give them vitamin K. If they've got a platelet problem, we give them DDAVP. But we give them blood, we resuscitate them, and then we call down OB if they're that unstable patient. And they might do vaginal packing, which reduces blood flow to the uterus. They might do uterine tamponade with a Foley into the uterine cavity with a Foley and blow it up with saline. They might take them to interventional radiology. They might take them to the OR and do a DNC. But your job is resuscitate, reverse bleeding problems, and then get some help in that unstable patient. If they're stable, it's very different. How stable are they? If they're super stable, it probably doesn't matter what you do. You just have to determine that they're stable and they're okay to get followed up as an outpatient. But in that sort of patient that's metastable, where maybe they can't get seen for a week or two and you want to do something, the easy things that you can do for these patients is to find the cause. And remember that the differential diagnosis here is divided into structural causes, general bleeding disorders, and then problems with the hormonal pathways. So the structural problems you can mostly pick up by a good physical exam. Look for the cervical cancer, look for the laceration, feel for the uterus as it's huge, maybe get an ultrasound. Is there a huge uterus in there that shows submucosal fibroids that are bleeding a lot? Structural, easy, we look and we feel and we use ultrasound. Bleeding disorders is mostly through history. Do they have bruising? Do they have excessive bleeding at other times? Is there a family history that they've got a bleeding disorder? Are they on a drug which causes a bleeding problem? And we know how to reverse those ones as well. And then we get to that patient who just has dysfunctional uterine bleeding, which is by far the most common cause, which is a hormonal problem where we're getting the endometrium growing big and then growing small and bleeding and not bleeding. That's where it gets difficult. But if they're stable, the summary is this, that in many places, all you need to do is give them a non-steroidal and an oral contraceptive pill of some form and follow them up. Remember this, though, that there are some patients, particularly as they got older, but there are some patients that are at risk for cancer and they present looking like dysfunctional uterine bleeding. And if you give them unopposed estrogen, then they can have cancers that actually have estrogen receptors. And that's why a lot of OBs don't want to do any hormonal manipulation until they've seen them, until they've done some biopsies and made sure, yes, we're just dealing with a hormonal axis problem and not some form of cancer. And you can be pretty young and get endometrial cancers, for example. So a lot of the time they want to come down and biopsy first. So you might be sending a lot of these patients home just with non-steroidals. Their hemoglobin's good. They're going to follow up with OB. And if they're low risk, they might just start them on one of their favorite hormone manipulation therapies. And if they're a little concerned, they'll do some biopsies first and then start manipulating their hormones. So if you think about it in that way, as simple a way as possible, this is not too hard. The most difficult group, I think, is that sort of metastable patient. The patient who's not really bleeding to death, nor the patient who's so stable it doesn't matter what you do, they can follow up, it doesn't matter what you do. It's that person where they've dropped their crit a lot and you want to do something now because they're not going to get followed up on OB. For those patients, non-steroidals you can pretty much give to everybody who doesn't have a contraindication. And then it's just talk to OB over the phone and decide biopsy now or not, and which type of hormonal manipulation might be useful after you've excluded as best you can one of the structural causes that's important, like cervical cancer, for example, and want to pick that up sooner rather than later. All right, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, I think this is a really difficult topic because we get sort of stuck in the tiger country of all of that axis and all the different drugs and all the different regimens that can be used to treat this. That's not really our problem. Our problem is to make sure they're stable. Our problem maybe is to rule out some of the bad structural causes. And then when it comes to these dysfunctional uterine bleeding causes, where there's lots of hormonal manipulation that can be done, that's when we get on the phone. That's when we get help. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, his name was Stuart Swadron. Her name was Misa Hospengler. My name was Mel Herbert. And this was Bleeding in the Non-Pregnant Patient. And I hope you found it helpful.
Okay, you remember? Palm coin.
P. Polyp.
That's right.
A. Adenomyosis. Leomyoma, M. Malignancy and hyperplasia.
And now coin.
C. Coagulopathy.
Yes.
O. Ovulatory dysfunction. E. Endometrial.
Yes.
I. Iatrogenic.
Yes.
N. Not yet classified.
It's so simple, there's no way to forget. Popcorn with an extra E in the coin.